Today is Wednesday, April 22nd, 2026, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Germany summons Russian ambassador and escalates confrontation with Moscow. By Johannes Stern. The German government on Monday summoned Russia's ambassador in Berlin, raising the confrontation with Moscow to a new level. The foreign ministry justified the step by alleging, quote, direct threats by Russia against targets in Germany, aimed at weakening our support for Ukraine. Berlin's response, it declared, was clear. Germany would not be intimidated. According to reports, the Russian Ministry of Defense last week published addresses of arms companies based in Germany. This was a reaction to the German government's announcement that it would supply new drones and long-range weapons to Ukraine, or have them produced there in cooperation with German arms manufacturers. In other words, the German government is responding to Russian warnings that in the event of further Ukrainian attacks on Russian territory driven by Germany, Moscow might target military installations in Germany, and it is responding with further escalation. The summoning of the Russian ambassador is aimed at further shattering already severely damaged relations and preparing the transition to an open military confrontation. Summoning an ambassador is among the most confrontational actions in diplomacy. In a situation in which Germany already plays a central role in the NATO proxy war against Russia in Ukraine, it constitutes a political signal of considerable significance. It does not stand for dialogue, but for its systematic termination. The summoning is a harbinger of further steps, up to and including the complete severing of diplomatic relations. It must be stated clearly, nearly 85 years after the invasion of the Soviet Union by the Nazi regime, Germany is once again de facto at war with Russia. This development has nothing to do with the defense of freedom and democracy against a, quote, Russian aggressor, as official propaganda would have it. It is a result of a long-term policy pursued by the ruling class, which is asserting its imperialist interest with increasing aggressiveness. At the beginning of 2014, Berlin, in close alliance with the United States, organized a coup in Kiev, and relying on fascist forces, brought a pro-Western regime to power. This regime intensified the confrontation with Russia, and in close coordination with NATO, effectively provoked the Russian invasion in February 2022. Since then, the NATO powers have continuously fueled the war against Russia in Ukraine and made clear that they are not seeking a diplomatic solution, but rather the military capitulation of Moscow. The visit of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to Berlin a few days ago marked another decisive step in this escalation. The signed Strategic Partnership institutionalizes military cooperation at a new level. It includes concrete armament projects aimed at enabling Ukraine to carry out long-range strikes deep into Russian territory. At the same time, German cooperation and state bodies are securing influence over key sectors of the Ukrainian economy, particularly its extensive raw material resources. Ukraine thus functions as a geostrategic bridgehead of German imperialism. Similar to Israel in the Middle East, it serves as an outpost for the enforcement of imperialist interest across an entire region, from Eastern Europe far into the Eurasian landmass. This orientation is part of a broader drive to the east, harking back to the historical expansionist ambitions of German imperialism in the 20th century, which culminated in the greatest crimes in human history. How openly this policy is now being articulated was demonstrated in a speech by Foreign Minister Johan Wadefull on April 17th at the handover ceremony of Panzer Grenadier Brigade 41 and the return roll call of the NATO mission in Lithuania. Wadefull denounced Russia as a threat, which is, quote, inflicting terror on the people of Ukraine. From this, he derived the necessity of massively expanding the military strength of Europe, with Germany taking the lead, increasing readiness and permanently strengthening the presence of NATO's eastern flank. Germany is assuming responsibility for the defense of Europe, a formulation that in this context means nothing other than preparation for a great European war against Russia. Particularly telling is the deployment and expansion of German troops in Lithuania. The 41st Panzer Grenadier Brigade and another combat brigade totaling more than 5,000 troops and armed to the teeth currently being stationed there are not a defensive measure, but part of an offensive military strategy aimed at a direct confrontation with Russia. At the same time, the European powers are advancing their nuclear capacities and planning. Initiatives by French President Emmanuel Macron for a stronger European nuclear deterrence are not only being discussed, but actively pursued. On Monday, Macron and Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk, at a meeting in Gdansk, spoke in favor of joint exercises and closer cooperation in the field of nuclear deployment strategies. Quote, our cooperation, whether in the nuclear field or in joint maneuvers, is a cooperation that knows no limits, said Tusk. Macron declared that in the coming months, measures would be taken to enable concrete progress, particularly in the area of nuclear deterrence. Quote, there could be deployments of French combat aircraft carrying nuclear warheads in Poland. These developments enjoy broad support in Berlin. Chancellor Friedrich Merz has signaled that Germany is prepared to participate in corresponding European nuclear initiatives. At the same time, voices are growing in political and military circles openly, calling for the acquisition of Germany's own nuclear capabilities. This crosses a threshold that dramatically increases the danger of a nuclear conflict. The growing tensions among the European powers themselves do not alter this fundamental trajectory. On the contrary, they intensify the pressure to rearm militarily and to position themselves in the struggle over spheres of influence and resources. The war in Ukraine and the escalation against Russia are central arenas of this global redivision. Against this background, the stance of the German government toward the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran is also a warning. When Chancellor Merz defended the threats of annihilation issued by U.S. President Donald Trump as legitimate negotiation tactics, he made clear that the ruling class is prepared to support and itself again employ the most extreme forms of military violence. Criticism from Berlin is not directed against these barbaric methods, but against the danger that an escalating war in the Middle East could weaken the strategic offensive against Russia. The consequences of this policy are enormous. An open war against Russia requires the complete militarization of society. Already, democratic rights are being eroded, social spending drastically cut, and the economy oriented toward war production. The reintroduction of conscription aims to recruit hundreds of thousands of young people as cannon fodder. A direct war against the nuclear power Russia would inevitably raise the danger of nuclear escalation, threatening the existence of all humanity. Workers and young people must face this reality. The ruling class is prepared to plunge the world into catastrophe once again in order to enforce its imperialist interest. This can only be countered through the building of an international socialist anti-war movement. The working class must organize independently, mobilize against militarism and war, and fight for a society based on social needs rather than profit interest.
110 miners
Detained in Turkey, Amid Iran War, by Ulash Sevink. The detention of 110 coal miners by police on Tuesday morning in Ankara, Turkey's capital, as they staged a peaceful protest and hunger strike outside the Ministry of Energy, demanding unpaid wages and other rights, is a warning to the international working class. The miners were released after 14 hours, but their demands were not met, and the threat of violent state repression has not been removed. The World Socialist website and the Socialist Estilik Partisi, Dördünük International, the Socialist Equality Party, the Fourth International, call on workers, youth, and intellectuals in Turkey and internationally to defend the miners. The Erdogan government's brutality towards the miners stands in stark contrast to the sentiments of broad sections of the population. While the miners were in custody, numerous prominent artists published solidarity videos on social media that drew widespread support. A protest was held in Istanbul against their detention. Workers at Doruk Mining, owned by Yıldızlar SSS Holdings, were arrested in the midst of the U.S.-Israeli imperialist war against Iran, Turkey's neighbor. Governments preparing for war everywhere will respond in the same repressive fashion to growing worker struggles. According to a statement by the Independent Mining Workers Union, Bagimiz Maden İş, requests for blankets for sick and elderly workers were denied throughout the night. Bags containing medication were not allowed into the area. Doctors were refused entry to the protest site. One worker who fell ill during detention was taken to hospital. The miners set out from Eskişehir on April 13th and reached Ankara on Monday after a 9-day march of approximately 180 kilometers or 112 miles. The problems and demands faced by miners are shared by countless other workers around the world. Their demands include payments for a month of unpaid wages, severance, and notice pay for dismissed workers, and an end to the imposition of unpaid leave, safe working conditions, reinstatement of workers dismissed for union membership, and the nationalization of the mine to guarantee job security. One miner expressed the mood within broad layers of the working class. Quote, "If we have taken to the streets, it means that it is not bearable anymore." End quote. Turkey's ruling class is sitting atop a social powder keg. The 2026 net monthly minimum wage was set at 28,000 lira, or $620, well below the minimum subsistence level. Even with three minimum wage earners in a household, a family of four cannot reach the poverty line of 97,000 lira, or $2,159. Approximately half of workers in Turkey gets the minimum wage. Against this backdrop, the combined wealth of Turkey's 30 billionaires has reached $73.8 billion, more than the total assets of 44% of the population, approximately 38.5 million people. Turkey ranks among the top countries in Europe in terms of income and wealth inequality, and comes first among European, OECD, and G20 nations in inflation. While the official annual inflation rate stands at 31%, the independent research group ENAG calculates real inflation at over 57%. Miners occupy a critical position in global production and supply chains while working in one of the deadliest sectors. Due to inadequate reporting, estimates of the global annual death toll in the mining industry range between 7,000 and 14,000. According to the Work Accident Investigation Commission, ISIG, 1,267 workers were killed in Turkish mines between 2013 and 2025. The conditions of brutal exploitation and precarity that claimed 301 lives in Soma in 2014 have grown worse today. This is a direct consequence of policies that have driven down the social conditions of the working class in the interest of corporations, banks, and military spending. Turkey's 2026 budget sharply increases military and security expenditures while cutting social spending, extending tax amnesties to corporations, while loading budget deficits onto the shoulders of workers. This ruling class offensive, carried out with the direct assistance of the union apparatus, is meeting growing resistance. In March 2026, over 1,200 workers at the Polyak mine in Izmir broke through a gendarmerie barricade and seized the mine. During the struggle, workers debated, quote, seizing the power across the country. Earlier, more than 5,000 Migros warehouse workers resisted police violence and mass dismissals with a wildcat strike. The government's response to this developing independent movement within the working class has been an escalated wave of arrests. In mid-March, Mehmet Türkmen, leader of the independent textile union Birteksen, was imprisoned for a speech he gave to workers. Ezra Isik, who opposed the plundering of the Akbelen forest and surrounding villages by mining companies, was arrested in late March. While Basaran Aksu, organizing specialist of Bagimiz Maden İş, who protested the arrest on social media, was held in custody for days. This was followed by the detention of the union's lawyer for almost 1 week. This wave of repression was tacitly endorsed by the official union confederations, including the opposition Confederation of Progressive Trade Unions, DISK, by their ignoring it entirely. The integration of the union apparatus with the state and corporations makes it imperative for workers to build independent rank-and-file committees to fight for their social and democratic rights. Workers face a global capitalist offensive that can only be countered with a global strategy. The construction of the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWARFC, is necessary to unite and coordinate these struggles across national borders. In Turkey, particularly since 2025, basic democratic rights are being dismantled and state repression is being directed at the political opposition, including the Republican People's Party, CHP. Ekrem İmamoğlu, the Istanbul Metropolitan Mayor and CHP presidential candidate, has been imprisoned since March 2025. Numerous other CHP mayors, members of left parties, trade unionists, and journalists have been detained. State repression directly targeting the working class in recent months has intersected with two major global developments: Donald Trump's return to the U.S. presidency in January 2025, and the launch of the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran on February 28th this year. Trump, whom Erdogan still calls my friend, and with whom he has been deepening his ties, is constructing a fascist regime in the United States that tramples the Constitution and basic democratic rights, while simultaneously mounting a vicious attack on the social conditions of the working class. In Germany, the CDU-SPD coalition government is financing military spending through social cuts. In Britain, the Labour government is breaking strikes. In France, President Emmanuel Macron continues his assault on pension rights. The Erdogan government functions as an instrument of the capitalist oligarchy against the working class, which is resisting attacks on its social conditions. However, the government is in profound conflict with the overwhelming majority of the population over the imperialist war against Iran and its alliance with the Trump administration. A Metro poll survey found that 98% of the population do not want the U.S.-Israeli alliance to win this war and oppose U.S. military bases in Turkey. Erdogan attempts to deflect this overwhelming opposition by falsely placing the entire responsibility for the war on Israel alone. Meanwhile, bases in Turkey continue to serve U.S. forces. The Azerbaijan oil flows through Turkey to Israel. In mid-March, Ankara co-signed the Riyadh Declaration alongside Pakistan, Azerbaijan, and Gulf regimes, legitimizing the U.S.-Israeli aggression and condemning Iran's right to self-defense. Turkey is preparing to host a NATO summit in Ankara in July, to be attended by a series of imperialist war criminals. Although the CHP claims to oppose the war and denounces Trump, it is a pro-imperialist party that represents the interests of the same ruling class as the Erdogan government. In September 2025, the CHP submitted a report to NATO, which repeated U.S.-Israeli propaganda, designating Iran as the source of regional instability, and recommended NATO's expansion into the Middle East. In the midst of such enormous popular opposition to the war and collaboration with U.S. imperialism, the Erdogan government is determined to fortify the home front and suppress all opposition, above all the rise of an independent workers' movement. The negotiations, launched between Ankara and the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, in late 2024, are part of this process. It is essentially aimed at reaching an agreement between the Turkish and Kurdish bourgeoisie, in alignment with the United States, at bringing the working class under control domestically. The events of the past 18 months have exposed the fraudulence of the claims of peace and democratization, and the pseudo-left forces that support it. In a parliamentary speech on Tuesday, CHP leader Özgür Özel opposed the state crackdown on minors and claimed that all workers' rights would be granted under a CHP government. This claim is fraudulent. The CHP has imposed poverty wages on workers in the municipalities under its administration in Istanbul and Izmir, and has broken strikes through a DISK-affiliated union by mobilizing other municipalities. The record of the Social Democratic Allies, with whom the CHP gathered at last week's Global Progressive Mobilization Summit in Barcelona, is one of imperialist war, social cuts, and the erosion of democratic rights. As the CHP defends the same interest as the Erdogan government, and is tied to the same imperialist financial and military system, it is organically incapable of resolving fundamental social and democratic issues affecting the working class. These tasks require a frontal assault on the ruling class's wealth, power, and ties to imperialism. This means the working class struggle for power based on an international socialist program. The struggle for social and democratic rights must be combined with building an international anti-war movement. In last-minute reversal, Trump extends ceasefire with Iran, by Patrick Martin. Acting only hours before the expiration of a two-week ceasefire in his war of aggression against Iran, U.S. President Donald Trump announced an extension of the pause in the war for an indefinite period of time. His statement on social media reads, "Based on the fact that the government of Iran is seriously fractured, not unexpectedly so, and upon the request of Field Marshal Asim Munir and Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif of Pakistan, we have been asked to hold our attack on the country of Iran until such a time as their leaders and representatives can come up with a unified proposal. I have therefore directed our military to continue the blockade and, in all other respects, remain ready and able, and will therefore extend the ceasefire until such time as their proposal is submitted and discussions are concluded one way or the other." End quote. While Trump claimed that the extension was to allow time for negotiations, Iranian officials warned that the pause might merely be a screen for a second U.S. attempt to decapitate the regime, following on the February 28 strikes that killed Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and dozens of top aides and family members. The decision came as an abrupt reversal by the White House. Trump had been posting declarations on social media all day Tuesday, claiming that there would be no extension of the ceasefire that U.S. bombing of Iran would resume as early as Tuesday night, and that the U.S. military is raring to go. The extension of the ceasefire is to be accompanied by a continued U.S. naval blockade on shipping to or from Iran, enforced in complete defiance of international law. In the latest act of piracy, U.S. Marines seized control of an Iranian oil tanker in international waters off Southeast Asia Tuesday. In declaring that the ceasefire would continue, quote, until such a time as their proposal is submitted and discussions are concluded one way or the other, Trump was recalling the genocidal language of statements leading up to the ceasefire when he threatened to bomb every bridge and power plant in Iran and even destroy Iran as a civilization. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance had been set to travel to Pakistan Tuesday to resume talks with Iran that broke off after only one day, when Iran rebuffed demands that amounted to a complete surrender on all issues and the transformation of Iran into a U.S. semi-colony. This included direct U.S. control of Iran's nuclear fuel stockpile, which was largely buried by the previous U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign last summer. Iranian officials made it clear, however, that they were not prepared to resume the talks in Pakistan until the U.S. halted its blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. Trump's claim that he extended the ceasefire unilaterally at the request of Pakistan is an obvious lie, seeking to cover up for both possible preparations for another full-fledged airstrike on the Iranian leadership, as Tehran warned, and the need to rebuild the stockpile of advanced U.S. weaponry. According to a report by CNN Tuesday, quote, the U.S. military has significantly depleted its stockpile of key missiles during the war with Iran and created a near-term risk of running out of ammunition in a future conflict should one arise in the next few years, according to experts and three people familiar with recent internal Defense Department stockpile assessments, end quote. CNN referenced an analysis by the Center for Strategic and International Studies that provided figures for a range of weapons. 45% of precision strike missiles, at least 50% of THAAD missiles, which intercept ballistic missiles, nearly 50% of Patriot air defense interceptor missiles, 30% of Tomahawk missiles, and 20% of SM-3, SM-6, and joint air-to-surface standoff missiles. While sufficient supplies remain to resume the one-sided war against Iran, according to CNN, quote, the number of critical munitions remaining in U.S. stockpiles is no longer sufficient to confront a near-peer adversary like China, and it will likely take years before the inventory of those weapons returns to pre-war levels, the CSIS analysis concludes, end quote. The Pentagon has sent out urgent requests to U.S. weapons manufacturers, but refilling the stockpiles for a major war could take several years. Unnamed Pentagon and military officials, as well as Democrats with close connections to the military intelligence apparatus, such as Senator Eliza Slotkin, a former CIA agent and Pentagon official, have suggested that the war in Iran is degrading the U.S. ability to fight China, which all factions in the U.S. ruling elite regard as the main threat to U.S. global domination. Quote, the Iranians do have the ability to make a lot of Shahed drones, ballistic missiles, medium range, short range, and they've got a huge stockpile, Arizona Democratic Senator Mark Kelly said last month. So at some point, this becomes a math problem. And how can we resupply air defense munitions? Where are they going to come from? End quote. Democratic Party commentary has shifted sharply, dropping criticism of Trump's open threats to commit war crimes, and instead warning that the main danger is that he will abandon the war too quickly, claiming victory when he has failed to accomplish the goal of U.S. imperialism. Speaking on the ABC program this week, Democratic Representative Ro Khanna said, the enriched uranium is still there. We have a more hardline regime there. Khamenei Jr. actually wants to develop nuclear weapons. Does anyone believe that we actually have more leverage over the Strait of Hormuz? We have less. China has more influence in Iran. End quote. Opinion polls show that nearly two-thirds of the American people oppose the war against Iran, and a staggering 59% regard Trump as unreliable in terms of the potential use of nuclear weapons. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.